in the USSR.
Good morning, boys and girls. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. Welcome to the show. It's Your Money, the financial radio show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. Yes, we are the doctors of discernment, the captains of common sense, and we are here to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth and the deception and the layers of deceit that are often propagated in this industry. Now, I'm getting off on a tangent. Hey, happy Saturday morning. I hope this finds you all well. It's great to be here. It is gorgeous weather in central Pennsylvania. Central Pennsylvania. That's from my wife. She's from Pennsylvania. I'm from out west, so I always call Pennsylvania Pennsylvania for her benefit. But anyway, welcome to the show. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. We appreciate you listening. Hopefully, we have enriched your life in some small way in the past. If you are a new listener, well, welcome. You are in for a treat today because this is a no holes barred type of conversation and information that we assimilate on this show, and it's predominantly about finances and investing, insurance, and you name it, the whole ball of wax. It's often boring and mundane and dry, but it is one of these areas that needs to be taken care of and really needs to be worked at. I'll tell you, folks, most people are really ignorant when it comes to financial education, and unfortunately, it's really because the industry doesn't want to spend much money, doesn't want to spend much money. I noticed, I was listening to a show recently, and I noticed I bunch a lot of words together, and you know, it's interesting, you don't ever listen to yourself talk, but when you listen to yourself talk, I notice I put a lot of words together. It might sound a little red once in a while, but that's okay, no big deal. By the way, I am joined this morning by Deb Seward. Deb is works in our office at Financial Abundance, and she has 30 years in the industry. She's been on a couple shows, and she's going to come on and be a soundboard a little bit, help me out, because some of these concepts can be a little bit heavy, and when you don't have someone to converse with, it's hard to get it out there. So what we're going to do today is focus on the 20 must-answer questions for lasting peace of mind as it relates to investing in the market. This is not about any insurances or tax strategies or any of those types of income for life models or long-term care or any of that stuff, okay? This today is really about what is it that you really need to know to invest in the market. I say to people all the time, I wouldn't put a dime in something I didn't understand. But I'll tell you that I'm going to guess at least 95 out of 100 people don't understand what they're invested in. And it's not because they're not intelligent people. It's just that's not their gig. Right, Deb?
That's exactly right.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
When you think about your gig, that's what you should be a professional at. I mean, this is all I study unless I'm at home. I mean, when I'm working, this is all I do. This is what you do. This is my vocation.
That's right.
So, you know, it's understandable that, you know, it's interesting. It's one of those things that's interesting, you know, if you think about it. You really need to be as financially astute as you can because you're dealing with your life savings and nest egg, but it's not something that that many people pursue as a vocation. So it's like anything else. When it comes to areas that might be a little heavier than we want to delve into and really concentrate on learning, we go to professionals to help us. That's why all of us don't become dentists and doctors and plumbers and mechanics, because we go to professionals for that. So today what we want to do is really tee up some serious coaching and education. For those of you that faint of heart are wimpy in structure and nature mentally, you might want to just go ahead and turn the radio off. This is not for you. This is for people that really want to know the truth will set you free. I practice in my life, in my practice, the 11th commandment. This is Paul. This is Paul's 11th commandment, and that is, thou shalt not fake thyself out. And it's just as I explained to my daughter yesterday, if you do, shame on you. You know better. Okay, so we like to pull back the curtain, be honest about where we are, figure out what's going on. And my goal every hour, every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, is to pull back the curtain and enrich your life in some small way. I know people don't sit and listen to the radio for the whole hour sometimes. You know, you're listening to it while you're driving around or whatever. I would venture to say that ours is one of the few shows that it would probably behoove you. For you rednecks there, that means that's a good thing. It would help you. I jest. I'm joking. I'm in a good mood today, as you can tell. For those of you that would listen to the whole show, I think you'd get a lot out of it because we don't repeat over and over again what we're talking about. But today, for Deb's benefit, this is all about Deb today. This is about helping Deb. Deb comes from 30 years in the financial services industry in traditional planning model structure, business model. So she's come over to our firm, which is as far away from traditional as you could probably get.
Yes.
We pursue an academic approach. Everything we do has a tremendous amount of coaching, education, analysis, self-discovery. We have a holistic approach to planning. None of our clients went back to work after 2008 because they didn't have their money in the market. We do a lot of different and unique planning. And one of the things that we have become known for in the last 10 years here in Central Pennsylvania is that I am the investor coach and becoming more and more branded as that. And that's what we do. We educate, we pull back the curtain, whether it be on our radio show that you can listen on iTunes, whether it be the WJAC TV investor coach for NBC. I'm the NBC affiliate investor coach, whether it be our website or blogs. There's a plethora. Yes, you've heard me say that before. I love saying that word. A plethora of information out there for you to take advantage of. Now, there are 20 must-answer questions. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, every single person should know the answers to these 20 questions. Very few people know many of them because the industry doesn't seem... I don't know, Deb, what do you think? I'm always going off on these conspiracy tangents. What's your honest observation and opinion of what the industry thinks about education?
Well, they don't want us to know any more than what they know, so they can hide the truth and kind of rake us over the coals a little bit when it comes to cost. And the less we know, as we've talked about, knowledge is power.
Are they really that devious? Are they really that?
I don't think they mean to be purposely. Maybe at a different corporate level, but for me personally, when I was working on the traditional level, that's not what I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to deceive people. I was really trying to do, honestly, the best job I could with the tools that I had.
Well, I guess you can't blame them. When you own a business, you want to manage your business as best you can. If you can tweak a point here, tweak a percent here. We were talking about American Airlines yesterday, right? I was
watching
a show about American Airlines. The CEO of American Airlines says it costs $25,000 to make a cup of coffee while they're still on the ground. Because they have an auxiliary power unit they have to fire up just for that purpose. So they started either plugging in land and quit using the auxiliary power unit and were not serving coffee to first class before they take off. And they picked up like $1.8 million.
It's
so it's the little things, you know.
Yeah.
So you can't blame the industry for managing their business and getting what they can. Although I'll tell you what, I'm getting tired of I don't know about the rest of you, ladies and gentlemen, but with the taxes and the check I just wrote for taxes, I'm getting tired of pulling this train. I need some help. Is there anybody out there that wants to kind of harness up with me? Because I'll tell you what, we don't get one entitlement, not one doggone thing out there, but yet we got to pay all these taxes. Now, I don't know about you, but my tongue's hanging out. I'm getting tired of pulling the train.
I don't think you're alone.
I know. So anyway, I don't want to get off on tangents. Y'all hear enough of that crapola and that negative spin and all the minutia that you're hearing on both sides in the middle. It just makes us frustrated. So anyway, back on point, we want to focus on answering some of the 20 must-answer questions. Now, it's just way too deep to get into all 20. So what I thought would be the best thing to do is allow Deb to pick the 10 that she wanted to know more about and talk most about, because she's in still part of a little bit of a learning curve. I mean, even though you bring all those years of experience, when we start looking at an academic approach, it's just so foreign and different from what you've done, right?
It is. I have to feel like I'm starting all over in some cases.
So we believe that these are 20 questions everybody must know the answers to in order to be a prudent, well-educated investor, but more importantly, to really have peace of mind. And hopefully I remember at the end of our time here together to submit to you that if you could answer some of these questions, how would you feel? So I often forget to do that. So with that in mind, Deb, let's fire away. Let's start with the questions. These are 10. We're going to hit some of the questions as it relates to investing in the market that every investor should know.
Yeah, one of the first ones I want to point out is, have you defined your investment philosophy?
Okay.
I have it as question number four.
Question number four, have you defined your investment philosophy? Now, what is an investment philosophy? A lot of people think of investment objective, conservative, moderate, growth, aggressive, whatever, long-term, whatever. Well, no, those are objectives as it relates to your risk tolerance and how a portfolio might be built. Investment philosophy is totally different. Everyone knows it's important to have basic philosophies of life to simplify making complex decisions. For example, it's crucial to have a basic underlying philosophies of religion, business, education, and even the nature of good and evil. Most people do not even know it is possible, though, to have a philosophy when it comes to the field of investing. It is possible, and more than impossible, Deb, it's absolutely crucial.
Yes.
To the success. Most people choose an investment strategy without an underlying philosophy. To be successful, philosophy must be developed and instituted. There are two basic market philosophies. One is that the market works, and the other is that the market fails. There are really two camps out there. There's a larger camp that believes the market's inefficient, that studious, smart people can find inefficiencies and capitalize on them. There's a smaller group out there that fall more in the academic arena, and scientific arena that believes supply and demand and capitalism and free enterprise is efficient, and that the market is efficient. And so there's two philosophies out there. We talked about this earlier today, right?
Yes.
Now, what's your input on that?
Well, my input is this. I thought, in my traditional ways, I always felt that the market worked, the free markets worked. But what I didn't realize is all the education and the way you're taught in the last 30 years was really more from the failing side. So I didn't even realize that there was two distinctly separate opinions.
Philosophies.
Yeah.
Philosophies, yeah. Whether you believe the market's sufficiency, there's a larger group of people, and it's because of the transactions that can be made in the industry why these people believe this, that they're studious and can find inefficiencies and capitalize them on them. I haven't seen that to be the case. I mean, you know, like my dad used to say, even a blind hog will root up an acorn once in a while.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, you're going to have – there's no empirical research, there's no studies, there's no data that proves out the ability for money managers to consistently beat the market by using an active approach, which is basically saying we believe the market fails, and as a result we can find – inefficiencies in the market, companies that we should buy, own, and hopefully do well. We believe that you should own the whole market, and we want to get whatever the market will bear. We're not trying to beat the market. I believe the United States stock market is the best wealth generation tool known to man. The problem is most people are not invested in it in a prudent manner. They try as hard as they may. Advisors try as hard as they may. It's just very difficult when you have an industry that's skewed toward the concept of inefficiencies in the market, when in fact we look at the market and supply and demand, our market seems to be quite efficient.
And you know what? It really scares investors as well, because when you go through those trying times like 2008 and you wonder what you're doing and why you're doing it, I think the educational process makes so much more sense for people that know that need to be in the market, need to stay ahead of inflation. It's not just about your pension or your Social Security anymore.
Well, this is true. So you got to stay. You got to keep an eye on knowing what's going on in the market, understanding, a philosophy. Do you believe the market's efficient or inefficient? Let's try to get one more in before the break.
Do you know how to measure diversification in your portfolio?
How do you measure diversification in your portfolio? Well, everyone knows it's prudent to diversify. What is that? Well, Markowitz came up with the idea of diversification, along with some other academics through history. That basically it's the idea, diversification is basically the idea of dissimilar price movement.
Right.
You want to own suntan lotion and umbrella companies as a basic example. So everyone knows it's prudent, but how do you measure it? Academic and economic scientists use a very specific measuring tool called correlation to determine if your portfolio has been properly built. If you do not know specifically, chances are you are not truly diversified. In the typical portfolio, assets tend to move in a step rate fashion so that when one crashes, they all crash. To do it right, you must measure it. So if your portfolio is running lockstep with the S&P 500 or close to it, that probably tells you you have a lot of large U.S. companies in it.
That's right.
That's why those are the people that took a 50% hit in 08. Those that had more diversification didn't see that.
Yeah, and I always thought if you own 5 or 10 funds, you were well diversified. But that a lot of the funds own the same companies, and if they're all large and you don't have any small there, then you've got less diversification with that as well.
Yeah, so what Deb's alluding to is mutual funds are made up of individual stocks. What we find with the families of mutual funds, same families, we see a lot of the same holdings. Although they may have a dozen different mutual funds, we see the same holdings in them. So you own 5 of their mutual funds, think you're diversified, but really you're owning 5 mutual funds with the same companies inside. You're listening to It's Your Money. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm your host. I'm joined by Deb Seward this morning. We're pulling back the curtain on the financial services industry and focusing in on 10 of the 20 must-answer questions to achieve lasting peace of mind in the investing market, And so we need to take a break right here. We're going to take a quick break and come back and finish up with some questions. Stay with us. Again, it's Your Money. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Deb Seward, and you're listening to It's Your Money, the financial radio show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. We believe you don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the right thing. And we also believe that education plus clarity can lead to understanding and can result in peace of mind long term. So our goal today is to focus on some questions that must be answered if you're ever going to have any type of peace of mind or a prudent investment plan, if you will. And I want to encourage you to listen intently. If you do have questions, by the way, I know we rarely do the show live, and we do get feedback, and I appreciate all that. You can always go to the Financial Abundance Inc. That's Financial Abundance Inc., I-N-C, financialabundanceinc.com website, and you can ask the coach a question. There's a format to do that. We have a lot of blogs on there. You can listen to radio shows. So there's a wealth of information there for you. And if you would like to ask a question, then just go ahead and go to ask the coach a question, and it walks you right through that. And oftentimes we use those questions that people do send in anonymously on our WJAC-TV Channel 6, WJAC-TV Channel 6. I'm the Investor Coach. Normally you can catch me Thursday night, Friday mornings, and Sunday night. And we like to take questions we get from listeners and viewers and answer them on the air in our little coaching spots that we do. So there's lots of information out there, but we're focusing on 10 of the 20 must-answer questions to achieve lasting peace of mind. Deb Seward is here to help me. Deb, where are we?
We're on question number 7 right now, and that is, do you consistently and predictably achieve market returns? And that's a good one. I think there's a lot of people out there that think that they do. Or there's some that just look at their statements and say, well, it went up this quarter or went up this month, and they don't really sit down and study it.
So do you consistently and predictably achieve market returns? Well, the challenge is most people don't know what market returns are.
That's right.
How do they find out? That's why we do our market update. This is exactly why we try to endeavor. We endeavor, that would be double, wouldn't it? We endeavor to do the market update once every couple weeks. In fact, I have it done today. I don't know if we'll get into it, but we might scan it in the last section. So the last segment of the show, how do you know if you're consistently and predictably achieving market returns? How'd you do it before, Deb?
Well, a lot of times I would just do my own research, go onto the websites of the family of funds that I used and looked at those type of returns that were published.
Are you saying then that the client could not simply look at their statement and ascertain, like, what is that from Johnny Carson? What was the guy's name? Karnak. How he used to keep the questions hermetically sealed in a manic jar on Fort Funk and Wagnall's porch? Remember this, right?
I do remember it.
Ascertain. Whenever I think ascertain, I always think of Ed McMahon when he says to Johnny, and you can ascertain the answer without even seeing the question. Most people don't have a clue, so you really can't look at a...
And your statements really don't spell any of that out.
I was with 3 major brokerage firms. You were with how many in your career?
3.
Could you read any of the statements?
No.
They were all Greek, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Or Chinese, French. I don't know if that's politically correct anymore, is it, Deb? For those of you that may be Greek, Chinese, and French, if you're that easily offended, well, you got bigger problems, right?
Yeah.
I'm joking. I jest again. I'm in a good mood today, ladies and gentlemen. Don't fly off the handle saying, boy, that guy aggravates me. Well, the truth will set you free, and sometimes the truth is aggravating, isn't it, when
yes,
you're not
it is.
On track? Anyway, let's move on. What other question might... Did I answer that one?
Not really.
Okay, I mean, well, let's talk about it. Now, most people don't even know what market returns are. You should have a pretty good idea. The next step is for you to analyze your current holdings to see if they have consistently held up to the returns of the asset categories you are in during these periods that you've held. So in other words, most people don't have a clue. Really, this is a great opportunity to do a commercial about our investment analysis. You want to do a quick commercial about the power of that investment analysis?
It's the most powerful thing I've really ever witnessed. I never had the technology.
From a financial perspective.
Yeah, there you go. I never had the technology to kind of do an x-ray of the actual holdings in a portfolio, the actual cost involved in a portfolio, and the performances, how measured against risk or volatility in your portfolio. It's just a very amazing tool, and we do this analysis here in our office.
So we can really answer about 10 of the 20 must-answer questions by doing the analysis. The challenge that people have in trying to do the analysis on their own, it's just too daunting. I mean, we have huge databases that we go to from the University of Chicago and Morningstar and other sources, and it's very difficult. So most people don't know.
No.
They don't consistently and predictably achieve market returns because they don't consistently and predictably understand what the market returns are.
And any other broker house that I've ever worked at never had this type of software or analysis available.
We're talking the big firms. You know, somebody said to me the other day, and I had not heard this, they go, you know, Paul, your firm's not a Merrill Lynch, it's not a Vanguard or a Fidelity, it's a smaller firm. And that may deter some people from doing business. Well, I kind of like the fact that I'm a smaller firm, and because I can do what I want to do and do what's best for my clients. I'm not dictated to by some brokerage house or wire house or bank or large firm. So I don't know. To me, I think we're able to service our clients and take care of them. And I think what happens is most clients I've seen get lost in the minutia of large firms. What's your experience been?
Oh, very much so.
And what's it like when a rep leaves a firm?
Hmm.
It's like a feeding frenzy, isn't it?
Yeah, it almost makes you feel like...
it's embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. I actually worked with a guy that actually got real ill, and he could not come back to work. And by the time I saw what was happening to his portfolio when he couldn't return to work, oh, it was like greed. That's what changed my mind to not continue in a business that was so much greed.
It's interesting because your training... And we've addressed this after 30 years was transactions based.
Yes, it was, unfortunately.
And all of a sudden you come in here and you want to start keeping talking about transactions. Even, you know, they're good for people, but I said, look, we need to focus on a plan.
Yes.
Not a transaction. And I think it's changing. You're gradually having this paradigm shift. It is so interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
How different business is done in the mainstream institutions versus someone like our firm. It's quite a bit different.
I agree.
What's the next question you have?
Number 8, have you measured the total amount of commissions and cost in your portfolio?
Now, this is interesting. Even if you only own supposedly no load funds, which does not mean load free, ladies and gentlemen, if you really want to have no load funds, you need to be on a fee basis and an institutional platform. If you really want to have no load funds.
True.
Otherwise, you don't have no load funds. You just have, they're not load free. Let's put it that way. You got to pay the piper.
That's it. You got to pay the piper.
You got to pay the piper.
Nothing's for free.
Nothing's for free. Okay. So even if you own a supposed no-loan mutual fund, the internal commissions could be more than you ever could imagine. Without an independent analysis, you'll never know or understand what these hidden costs are doing to you and your portfolio. What you can't see can't hurt you is what the industry focuses on. Ladies and gentlemen, let me share something with you. And I've done this on the show a couple times. There's a gentleman by the name of Kenneth French. He's a professor. I want to say Dartmouth. Yale, Dartmouth, I always get those confused. Anyway, he wrote a paper a couple years ago called The $100 Billion Question, and he anticipated the fees that aren't really so-called published in the perspective, the variable trading costs are in tune of, and it was conservative when you read the paper that he had put out, in the tune of $100 billion a year.
Amazing.
most people are clueless. Most advisors are clueless. It really is. Listen, look, come on. Let's be real. These mutual fund managers, these guys and gals get paid a couple million bucks a year. They're not making $250,000 a year. They're making millions of dollars a year, right?
That's
in this
right.
industry. It's huge.
And
okay?
taken right out of the investors' returns.
And you know what they're getting paid to do? Gamble with your portfolio. I would love to have a job like that where I get paid $1 million a year to gamble with people's portfolio, because that's all they're doing.
Right.
They're betting on the next move. So, and that's why the cost is so high. So if you're wondering why the costs are so high, ladies and gentlemen, because of the turnover.
That's right.
The amount of turnover. Now, the rule of 72, I've talked about this before. There's a mental thing you can do in your head called the rule of 72. It was originally the rule of 69, but 72 is an easier number to work with mathematically. But if you have the rule of 72 states that you can divide years or interest rate by 72 and get the inverse number. So let's say that we wanted to know how often our money would double, Deb, and we're getting 10% because that's what the published return is on the mutual fund, 10%. How often would my money double?
Every 7.2 years.
Right. 10 divided into 72 would be every 7.2 years. So in 15-year time frame, my money would double twice.
That's correct.
So if I had 1,000, I would then have 2,000, and then the next 7 years, I'd have 4,000.
That's right.
My question to you, ladies and gentlemen, is if you're really getting the 10% that you think you're getting or the 12% that you think you're getting, your money should be doubling every 6, 7, 8 years. More than likely, it's probably doubling every 12 to 15 years, and that's because fees internally are closer to 5 and 6% when you really look at all of them, 3 to 5%.
That's very accurate.
Because of the variable trading costs. So, you know, if you were getting 6%, 6 goes into 72, 12.
Right.
If you're getting 5%, about 15. So if your money's about 12 to 15 years, which is what it takes for most people's money to double, and by the way, that's even making contributions, okay?
Yes.
Then your yield is not 10%. Mm. It may be gross, but it's not net, okay? Thou shall not fake thyself out. Half the population doesn't want to know the answer. You know what I mean? Some people just don't want to know the answers.
I do.
Okay? And the other half wants to know them, but they're not sure how to get them. Well, we're giving them to you right here. And if you want to get a copy of our advisor guide, just go to the website, ask us a question, and then we can talk to you about that. Where are we at now?
Question number 9 is, do you know where you fall on the Markowitz efficient frontier?
Harry Markowitz, the godfather of modern portfolio theory, the guy that really first started seriously studying diversification and correlation. He wrote a PhD dissertation in 1952. That was later in 1990. He was awarded the Nobel Prize for much of that work in economics, along with William Sharpe and Merton Miller. This guy has invented math that we use in the industry. Well, he also invented the concept of conservative, moderate growth, and aggressive. Well, it looks like we had a minor technical difficulty there for a second. We're talking about Harry Markowitz and how he invented the math that we use. He's the father of modern portfolio theory. Basically, he came up with this idea of you should get a certain level of return for any level of risk, and he created a conservative, moderate, aggressive, and long-term portfolio. So you need to know where you fall on the Markowitz efficient frontier if you want to have what's considered an optimum portfolio. This is what he's recognized for. These are four optimum portfolios, and it's a graph type of thing where you have a kind of a chart going up to the right, if you will, conservative, moderate, growth, and aggressive. So the Markowitz efficient frontier, it's important to find out where you fall, because this economic study allows a coach to help see exactly how much volatility and expected return your existing portfolio has and allows you to compare other mixes. So it's a great way to understand where you are now compared to where you should be in a well-diversified portfolio. Does that make sense?
It does.
I know it makes sense to you. Does it make sense to the listeners?
I believe it does. It's hard to show or talk about a graph, but this graph is in many of the brochures that you've probably been given in the past from if you've worked with an investor before.
Or advisor.
Or advisor, I'm sorry. The other thing is through this analysis we just talked about previously, we can give you a very exact where you currently are. And most people that we work with, Paul, that comes in and after we do the analysis, they never are above that line.
I've never seen one. I've never seen ever analyzed a portfolio that was above it. I've never seen it.
The portfolios that I have viewed or analyzed have always been below that, and they are accepting higher risk for
always.
The amount of return.
And it always is a result of what? A lack of diversification.
Always.
Most portfolios are heavy laden with large U.S. companies. I still don't understand why, except it's the only way I can figure out to hide or minimize the bid-ask spread or variable trading costs that attenuate most people's portfolios. I don't understand why we have so much large U.S. in most people's portfolios. Believe me, it's not patriotic.
No.
Okay. I don't know what it is, except transactions-based.
Yeah.
What's the next question? We got enough time before we go to a commercial?
Number 14, have you devised a clear-cut method for measuring the success or failure of your portfolio?
How do you know that your portfolio is doing what it's supposed to? If you make 15%, is that good? If you lose 10, is that bad? What benchmarks do you compare it to? How do you know whether it's working? Well, the way that we know is simply by every quarter looking at our portfolios, our statements, and on our statements it simply says this fund is supposed to replicate large U.S., and it shows the large U.S. index. It shows this fund's supposed to represent the Russell 2000 value, which is the large value mutual fund. So what happens is you can look at every index you have and every mutual fund, and you know exactly how you're doing compared to the market.
Yeah. It's right on the statement.
And what's interesting is some people might say, well, geez, the market was down 50% in 2008. Yeah, but your portfolio was down 15. So how are you doing?
Yeah, how's that make you feel?
Well, you're not happy you're down 15, but you're certainly happy you're not down 50.
I would say the average investor that I've worked with was down anywhere from 30 to 50%.
Yeah, I'd say close, most around the 40-plus range. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So what was that question? Have you devised a clear-cut method for measuring success or failure in your portfolio? And you should know this. Ladies and gentlemen, these are questions that every one of you should be able to answer. Unfortunately, most of you don't have the tools at your disposal to answer them. For those of you that really want to understand what's going on with your portfolio, give us a call and we can help you get it analyzed. And, you know, the intent of our show is not to be a commercial. It's intent to educate. But we also got to realize there's resources out there that people can take advantage of. And all they got to do is call the office and we can get them hooked up with that. I would rather know.
I would personally rather know.
You know, you're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Deb Seward, and you're listening to It's Your Money, the financial show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. When we come back after the break, we're going to hit on a few more questions, and if we have time, get into the market update. Again, Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, and It's Your Money, part of Saturday Morning Street Smarts and Coach's Corner. We'll be right back.
Destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
Welcome back to the show. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Deb Seward, and you're listening to It's Your Money, the financial radio show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. We will be followed here directly by Ken Pasch, the leadership guru, Mr. Leadership Extraordinaire, Ken Pasch, who's part of Coach's Corner. Ken and I, you know what? I was thinking about this the other day. I believe in June we're coming up on 3 years.
Amazing.
That is amazing. 3 years, ladies and gentlemen, that we have been enriching your lives, helping you muddle through all the deceit and dishonesty and deception and the smoke and mirrors out there. Yes, we are I'm proud to say I'm the doctor of discernment, you know, the captain of common sense. And, you know, common sense, as my dad always says, isn't that common. Have you heard that before?
I have.
Common sense isn't that common. Good old horse sense. I know a lot of you out there got some good old horse sense. So we're going to hopefully enrich your lives a little more today because we're talking about some of the commonly... let me retract that. We're talking about what should be commonly asked questions.
Should be.
But they're not.
That's correct.
So where are we at, Deb? Deb Seward's helping me talk about some of this stuff.
Well, we're on number 15, and that is, do you fully understand the implications and applications of diversification in your portfolio?
Ooh, that sounds like a trick question.
Yeah, it does.
Is that a trick question?
Don't mean it to be.
Do you fully understand the implications and application of diversification in your portfolio? Yes or no? Well, how do you know if you're diversified? How do you measure it? What is your portfolio likely to do during various market cycles? What's your historic worst-case scenario for your portfolio? What's the best-case scenario? Historically, what is your worst and best five-year performance? What's your one-year downside performance? These are all questions you should be able to address if you have a properly built-in diversification in your portfolio and you understand how it really works. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, the question is, do you fully understand the implication and application of diversification in your portfolio? A lot of shuns in there.
Yeah.
Huh? You don't want to get shunned in this area, okay?
Mouthful.
Yeah. So, by the way, I'd be interested in feedback as it relates to the sound. We've been doing the last four or five shows in my office rather than the opulent, beautiful downtown WBLF studios, but rather than doing them here in the Financial Abundance headquarters. Here in State College, Pennsylvania, for those of you that may not be familiar and listening on iTunes, we are getting a lot of inquiries from around the country. Deb, I was looking at Google Analytics to see who's hitting my website.
Yeah.
We've got every state in the United States covered now.
Nice.
And a number of international countries. In fact, it seems like you folks in Australia like me more than the rest of the world. So good day to you, and we appreciate you listening.
Impressive.
And if you would like me to come out and do some coaching for you there in Australia, I could probably make a trip down there. It'd have to be worth our while, though. You know.
Sure, we'll fly
out. Yeah, we'll fly out there. But anyway, where are we at? What question are we at? I'm getting off. I'm all over the place.
Well, we kind of took care of the last one. How about, do you have a system to measure portfolio volatility? I know, that's a good one.
Well, scientists measure variabilities of outcomes with the statistical measure of standard deviation.
That's a fancy word for risk.
And what does it mean?
It really just means how volatile, if a given return, if I'm supposed to return 10% every year, the standard deviation is a number that's associated with how close you come to that, either underperform or overperform.
How much could you on either spectrum?
Yeah, either side.
Yeah. Okay. How do you measure it? Well, it's actually possible to use statistics to examine volatility, the key measure of risk, with the same analysis that won the Nobel Prize for the godfather of modern portfolio theory, Dr. Harry Markowitz. Without this measurement, you are flying blind. It is the foundation of prudent and sound investing. If your planner or broker did not educate you about standard deviation, this should be a big red flag that tells you something is missing. Your coach can help you fix this problem. That's why we're here. Again, doctors of discernment, captains of common sense, professors of the profound. We are here to pull back the curtain and help you guys and you gals, or is that non-politically correct these days, Deb?
No, I think that's fine.
I remember speaking in New Jersey. It must have been 20 years ago in a leadership type event. I used to do a lot of public speaking. Yeah, I had an opportunity to meet Reagan and Bush.
Nice,
he's probably my favorite speaker of all time.
Who, Bush?
Reagan.
Oh, okay.
Ronald Reagan, I watched, held a group of 30,000 people in the palm of his hand, and you could hear a pin drop in the auditorium. That's how good, how captivating and engrossing and, what's the word, charismatic.
There you go.
He was. And, you know, the number two best speaker I've never heard is somebody most people have probably never heard of, and a guy by the name of Rich DeVos. Have you ever heard of Rich DeVos?
I actually heard of Rich DeVos.
He's one of the co-founders of Amway.
Yeah.
And I got an opportunity to meet, actually I met with him a couple times, got an opportunity to spend some time. This guy's a billionaire.
He owns
the Orlando Magic basketball team.
Oh, okay.
Where he used to. I don't know if he still does. But you talk about an incredible speaker. Man, oh man. And then number three would have to be the incomparable Zig Ziglar. I don't know why I'm talking about this stuff. Look these people up. By the way, have you ever heard of Zig Ziglar?
I have.
He was one of the original motivational speakers. He kind of came after Earl Nightingale. You remember Earl Nightingale?
He
was like the original.
That one I don't.
He was the original.
But Zig I do, as well as DeVos.
I was listening, and you can go on iTunes, ladies and gentlemen, and listen to great speeches in history. The actual speech, okay? Mm. I listened last week to the Gettysburg Address. It wasn't in that case. Most of the time it's the actual speech, but it may be redone, obviously,
right,
if they're dead, wasn't recorded. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't heard that lately, I've got chills listening to it. That's how good it is.
Probably a good time to go back and review that, isn't
it? Oh, my. Especially now.
That's what I mean.
Especially now. It is so timely with what we're talking about today. And you know, the other speech I listened to was President Reagan's inaugural, address, inaugural address.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't heard it, you need to go find it on the website and listen to it. It's about 17 minutes. It is so timely right now. It is exactly the opposite, the antithesis, the opposite, the black, the white. It is the opposite of what was going on exactly right now in this country. It's mind-boggling. In fact, he was going on to talk about how the government's not the solution, they're the problem, and yada, and all this stuff. Man, I was in my car. I just wanted to stand up and applaud. Ironically, or interestingly, I listened to President Kennedy's Democratic nomination acceptance speech. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you who don't know much about history, go back and listen to Kennedy and then listen to Reagan. It's almost like the same guy's talking.
Wow.
It is amazing how many people misinterpret Kennedy. If you listen to Kennedy's speeches, a lot of his old ones, well, they're all old, okay, his speeches, he sounds like a true conservative, and I don't like using those terms, conservative, liberal, because people hide under labels, you know, or want to stereotype.
Well, yeah, they're getting mixed up between the Democrats and the Republicans, and it really should be more united.
It is, you know what we're going to have to do is just get rid of the two existing parties.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I will put money behind and a lot of my effort behind anyone that wants to get together and start a grassroots movement in this country to enact term limits. There's only a couple things that'll ever fix this country, ladies and gentlemen. This is Paul's opinion. Number one is term limits. I've not talked to a politician that's for them.
I agree.
That speaks volumes to me. Number two, some type of flat sales tax or a flat rate tax. Now, some people say, well, Paul, doggone it, if you do a flat rate tax, what are you going to do with all the IRS agents? Put them on the border where they should be, not hire 16,000 new ones. Ladies and gentlemen, how do you all feel about having IRS police our new health care system?
Oh, I think there's a lot of people that's extremely upset about this.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about this stuff. What's the next question? I'm getting all fired up over here.
That's all right. You're getting excited. Are you aware of the incentives brokerage firms in the financial community have when selling commission-based products?
Wow. This is amazing. Okay, this is really amazing. The large financial institutions create the illusion that by using their research, it is possible to consistently and predictively make superior returns. Are you aware of how they use the media and advertising to create the illusion that they can go do something that is, in reality, nothing short of smoke and mirrors? By understanding all of the techniques they use to persuade investors, you may avoid some of the what we call deadly investor traps. We are constantly inundated. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't exaggerate. I jest not when I tell you daily, I get some kind of advertisement from a company, a mutual fund company, it's all of the big ones, okay, wanting me to hawk their products, waving stuff in front of me like trips to Greece and to Hong Kong and to Prague and to the French Riviera and Australia and all this stuff. And my question is the same to all of them. Who's paying for the trip? And the wholesaler, that's the guy who works for the company that's trying to bring on new people to sell their product. The wholesaler always says, well, the company's paying for it. Okay, well, where's it coming from in the company's budget? Well, you know, it comes out of their marketing budget. Well, where's the marketing budget come from? It comes from the fees that the clients pay, doesn't it? Yeah. So I don't work with any company that offer me any type of incentives at all, because who's paying for it?
The investor.
Investor's paying for it. And you know what's interesting, ladies and gentlemen? If I do go on one of these trips, and I've gone to them in the past, they give me a 1099 for the cost of the trip.
Yeah, a little unfair that way.
Yeah. You know what I say? Keep your trips. Keep all your dog and pony and your incentives and your bonuses. Just keep all that, and let's just keep the cost low for my client. I'll make enough money I can go take a trip once in a while.
I recently had a job offer with another firm, and that was one of their promotional items. They said, we'll take two trips every year.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, next, we're about out of time here. Well, we got a few minutes left. What do we got?
Do you know the three warning signs that you are gambling and speculating with your money versus prudently investing?
Ladies and gentlemen, this one's huge. What are the three warning signs that you're gambling and speculating with your portfolio? Now, some of you may say, well, Paul, I'm not managing my portfolio. I have a financial advisor, a money manager, or whatever. Well, what are the three warning signs that they are speculating and gambling with your portfolio? And the three warning signs very simply are stock picking, it doesn't work. Market timing, there's no empirical research to prove it whatsoever. And stock picking, market timing, and track record investing. I watched an interview. I still have it somewhere, buried somewhere, I'm sure. An interview that was conducted by the president of Dalbar Research out of Boston. They do an annual quantitative study on investor behavior. They come out with a report. It's shocking. I watched him interview the CEO of Morningstar. And he asked the Morningstar CEO, your star system implies your funds are going to do well in the future. Man, I'm telling you, the Morningstar guy got bugged out in a major way and said, what are you, we're not saying that at all. We're simply implying up to this point that this fund has done this, this star, this star, this star. Ladies and gentlemen, we know doggone well what they're implying, especially when they sell those ratings.
That's right.
To fund companies. If you go to a two-star restaurant, what's better, a two or four-star?
Four.
A movie, three or five star?
Five.
The implication is right there, and you notice in a lot of these advertisements that they have big stars on them.
Yep, they really promote it.
Oh, so, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you got to be careful. Track record investing, market timing, stock picking, they're gambling. Look, if you're going to play around with the market, take some of your money, get an E-Trade, a Scott Trade, a Blue Trade, Orange Trade, whatever trade, and go gamble and speculate with your money. But don't do that with your life savings.
That's right.
Look, it is just like going to Atlantic City, except you don't get the highs that you get from Atlantic City. All the bells and buzzers going off and the atmosphere and so on. Look, if you're going to gamble your money, let's go with some friends and family and go make it a fun, exciting thing. Do not call self-investing on E-Trade prudent investing.
That's right.
Unless you're adhering to scientific and academic principles, diversification, correlation, dissimilar price movement, understanding the cost. And it'd be very difficult for the average person who has a retail. Most people have retail accounts. We have institutional.
Right.
But for those that have retails, to even match an institutional portfolio. But anyway, I'm sounding like a commercial a little bit. Let's move on. What's the next one? We're almost out of time.
Do we want to go into the market recap at this time?
You know what? I don't have enough time to do that right here. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that this finds you well. We've got about a minute left. I want to encourage you to listen to Ken Pash, who's coming up with Unlocking Your Full Potential. And for those of you, again, if you have any questions, any thoughts, you would like to get more information, or you have subject matter that you would like us to focus on, go ahead and go to financialabundanceinc.com and give us your feedback. For those of you that give feedback, we appreciate it immensely. I know the vast majority of people that listen don't necessarily give feedback. I want to thank all of the new listeners in the Chambersburg area with the new station there. And I want to encourage you, if anything that you hear sounds appealing to you as it relates to education, to go check out our website, Financial Abundance, Inc., or you can go to WJACTV.com. And if you go to the news tab under there, It's Your Money. They've made a webpage just for us called It's Your Money. With that being said, thanks for your attention. I hope this finds you well. Hope you've got some kind of nugget that'll carry you through the next week. Thank you, Deb, for joining us. And we will see you, well, we'll talk to you next week. Have a super weekend. Enjoy your family and enjoy this wonderful weather. Have a great day.